PNC Bank brings you Call of the Wild Money Moves. Shh, listen.
Hey, guys.
That's the sound of a multi-level marketing pitch.
This is life-changing, you guys.
Sounds like she wants you to buy lots of essential oils.
They are so essential.
And then have all your friends buy essential oils.
Are you more of a geranium or a lavender fan?
Don't look her in the eyes. Guard against wild money moves with PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at Hero.co with code IHEART. That's Hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on Hero.co.
So an absolutely massive news story emerging from Newcastle United after we've recorded this week's main Pod on the Tyne episode. But it's definitely worth mentioning because Newcastle have agreed to purchase the land for where they intend to build their new, what they describe as world-class training facility at Walsingham Hall near Newcastle International Airport. They're going to invest £190 million into the project. They're going to apply for planning permission in early 2027, they say, and hope to be in their new home by 2029-30. It will initially house the men's first team and academies, and in future it may also house the women's team and their academy as well. But Newcastle are also going to retain their current training facilities, and perhaps they will repurpose them and move the women and the women's academy into those buildings. But for now, this shows huge commitment from Newcastle's ownership. There's been a lot of question marks raised about whether PIF and the Rubens will commit such a fee, but to announce a big ticket item like this, to do it and to make sure that they are investing in something which will have no actual direct financial return in for them, it will all be about just improving the facilities and hopefully attracting players in the future. We've been promised this post takeover. It's taken nearly 5 years, but at last Newcastle have made an official announcement, and hopefully it's going to move forward. So yes, we missed actual Pod on the Tyne episode recording for this, but we will discuss it in far more depth next week, and there will be a big episode coming soon.
Welcome to our season preview Pod on the Tyne. What do we expect from Newcastle United over the next 9 months or so? And after another summer of transformation, will there be good, bad, ugly, or a bit of all three? Are we excited? Do we all need a bit of a cuddle? What the hell is actually going on? Buckle up, boys. It's going to be bumpy. I'm Taylor Payne, and I'm joined, as ever, by George Corkin and Chris Woff. George, dear boy, how are you?
Full of anticipation, nervous anticipation, terrified anticipation, happy anticipation, sad anticipation, anticipatory anticipation. How about you, Taylor?
Yeah, all of those things and many more of the types of anticipation that are available to the human being, I think. Definitely, yeah, absolutely. Chris Woff looks like he's on the edge of his seat, literally and metaphorically. You all right, Chris?
I'm all right, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've aged over the summer, and given that George already thinks I was born 60, I don't know what that would make me as an actual biological age now, but I'm hoping that when the football arrives, that actually it'll give me a new youthful sort of verve, but I also fear that that might be optimistic.
Chris Woff's youthful verve, yeah, a tribute band that nobody asked for.
Coming up, we've got some insider tidbits on how transfers get done. We have Tanya Oxtoby on Newcastle Women's 11 new signings. That's so many. But first, it's our headlines in 30 seconds or less. In the words of Status Quo Boys, here we are and here we go. Chris, in the nick of time, Gonzalez progressing.
Yes, Newcastle United are progressing with a move for Nico Gonzalez, the Manchester City midfielder. He's 24 years of age. He is not of the sort of age profile of someone like Højbjerg, who they were looking at previously, but he does bring in that Premier League experience and the ball-playing, deep-lying midfielder who Matthijs Jijsler desperately wants. So hopefully that one gets done before the weekend, as Newcastle wanted to.
George, captain's armband. Come on. Big Dan, named club skipper.
Yeah, I wrote that, sorry. Probably not hugely surprising to anybody, but a fantastic moment for Dan Burn, the ultimate hometown hero after everything else he's achieved so far for Newcastle. Yeah, he has been named club skipper, someone who knows the team, the club, the city inside out, and in a summer of uncertainty, how lovely to have this figure of reassurance leading the team onto the pitch at St James's Park. Great moment for him and his family, and well deserved.
Lovely stuff. Back from the Derich, finally a fullback, Chris Woff.
That one's actually quite good, George. I'll give you that. Well done, Taylor. Newcastle have finally signed a fullback. They've needed a fullback since, well, they'd probably needed a left back last season anyway. Then they lost two more or three more, if you include Matt Targ at the end of last season. And finally, Amar Dedic has arrived from Benfica, a fee of around about £30 million. He's someone that Matthijs Jijsler knows well, and he may well go straight into the lineup for Liverpool on Sunday.
And a huge Premier League kickoff incoming with Keegan celebrations and tributes at St James's Park, George.
What a moment it will be. Yeah, Sunday, can't wait for it. It's a huge match for all sorts of reasons, not just the first game of the season, of course, not just Liverpool and Alexander Isak's return to St James's Park, but both sets of fans at the start will be united, celebrating the life and extraordinary career of Kevin Keegan, wonderful player for Liverpool, wonderful player for Newcastle, transformative manager, the man who made us all dream. Will get a chance to say a proper heartfelt goodbye. I doubt that there will be a dry eye in the house.
All right, then, let's start with a bit of background. George, in a piece for The Athletic, you've been gauging the mood of all Premier League fans. Where do Newcastle sit in that hope-a-meter league table? And what, if anything, does that tell us about what happens next?
I would just say, Taylor, you've put the emphasis on the wrong syllable there. It's very much a hope-o-meter, not a...
No, it's a hope-o-meter.
No, it's not a hope-o-meter, it's a hope-o-meter.
Well, no. If that's what you want to say, that's fine.
No, it's hopometer. It's a hopometer.
Hopometer. Like it's an Irish hopometer.
What does it tell us? Well, it tells the interesting thing, I think, there's a couple of things more widely about the table. Firstly, Leeds United top the league with 99% of Athletic respondents optimistic about the season ahead. That's vaguely interesting. It's not supposed to be like this with Leeds, is it? They're supposed to be dour. They're supposed to be stingy. They've just signed a goalkeeper for 40 million quid and they're all chirpy. I don't really understand that. But interesting, Liverpool are bottom of the table. So is this going to be a good time for Newcastle to play Liverpool? But the overall theme is that people are positive. So previously, I've done this now for a few years, very, very reluctantly, because I just do the same jokes all over again. But
you? No, I can't believe that.
No, I know. But normally, so like last season, I think Newcastle were bottom of the league last season, and only 19% of our fans were optimistic. Whereas this season, everybody, all the teams in the Premier League are more optimistic than they are negative, which I think is just sort of interesting. So Liverpool, 58% of their supporters are optimistic. Newcastle are fourth from bottom, which is probably not surprising in the circumstances. But even so, 65% of Newcastle fans are more positive than negative. So
when was this done, George? Was this pre- so it was done as well?
Yeah, it was done right at the end of last week for everybody. And And I just think that's sort of quite interesting. So obviously, like, nine clubs in the Premier League have new permanent managers this summer. So I just wonder whether that whole sense of freshness and difference has sort of made everybody just that little bit more cheerful.
It's quite interesting that the three promoted clubs are all sort of mid-table in this as well, in 84-85%, Hulls, Coventry and Ipswich. That's quite surprising to me.
Well, I don't know. Having done these a few years, you always get the same sort of thing, is that the promoted teams come up and all their fans are giddy because it's like, oh, the Premier League, it's really exciting. Oh, great.
And we've just had
and you've just spent an entire season winning most weekends. Yeah, and of course, you get to the Premier League and then you get beaten every week and get relegated. Of course, that didn't happen last season for Sunderland and for Leeds. They had very good seasons. But that 80% plus positivity goes all the way down to 15th place, which I think is fascinating. And so most teams are expecting to have a good season, which of course is impossible. I don't like it. It makes me very, very suspicious. You know, like, if you're pessimistic. So Newcastle fans last season were pessimistic. So were the fans of West Ham and I think Burnley, I'm going to say. Mm. And they were like the bottom three. And, you know, West Ham went down, Burnley went down, Newcastle had a tough old season. So I say congratulations to those supporters, because they were realistic. This just feels deluded to me. What is going on? Like, this mass delusion has taken over the Premier League. But I don't know. Is that because things are new? Maybe.
We've had a nice summer as well, haven't we? The sun's been out quite a lot. Maybe people have just got a bit giddy and a bit, you know, sort of.
Well, I've made that exact point. I mean, if you can't be optimistic in August when the sun's out, yeah, fair enough. The other way of looking at that, though, Taylor, is that the entire country is literally on fire. So the sun being out isn't necessarily a good thing.
Not a good thing, is it really?
No. So my very, admittedly very non-scientific conclusion from this was that perhaps people are suffering from smoke inhalation and it's just addled everyone's head.
Heat stroke or anything like that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Anything on there that jumps out at you, Chris? Anything you find interesting?
Well, I think that the fact that it's sort of like a two-thirds split almost on the Newcastle front is that to me strikes with the idea that, as George said, the freshness that maybe a lot of, or a fair proportion of supporters were feeling that Eddie Howe's tenure had come to a natural conclusion, or should have come to a natural conclusion, that maybe it needs something new. But then, at the same time, there's also a portion of supporters who possibly didn't want that, and also then supporters have seen what have happened this summer, Bruno Guimaraes departing, beyond the sales of Sandro Tonali and Anthony Gordon, and the exciting signings that Newcastle have made, but exciting signings who probably are not going to be ready to impress immediately, or most of them are probably not going to be ready to impress immediately. So I am not overly surprised by that, if you take it in a relative sense, relative to the rest of the Premier League and the other supporters who are relatively optimistic. I think Newcastle are just about where I would have thought they would have been, given my lack of knowledge about other clubs. But certainly at Liverpool, it seems that they've had a very destabilising summer. They're part of the hierarchy, are moving on, and despite all of the narrative about them having won the window last season and spent all that money, actually, in time, that money possibly hasn't brought the investment on the field, brought the return on the field that the investment offered had put in at the time. So yeah, I'm not massively surprised by it, but I just hope that those two-thirds of supporters who are optimistic find that that actually turns out to be the case and it's not a little bit misplaced.
Well, let's stick with optimism as a theme for a little while at least, chaps. What are the reasons to be cheerful about Newcastle this season? George, let's start. It's Newcastle 2.0, isn't it? Young, hungry, new, untested, unknown quantity in the Premier League. People are not going to have worked out how to play against them just yet. It could be that they take the league by surprise.
Yes, and so I'm not going to do any caveats to what you've just said. There are a few, Taylor, but have they worked out? Oh, no, I mustn't. Not yet. Yeah, so let's stick with the positive. And yeah, I absolutely share all those things. I mean, I think when you see new players come in, when you see a new head coach come in, it does remind you that things have felt a bit stale. Things did feel stale last season. Part of that was because there was just so much football. but also the league was a slog. You know, there's no getting away from that. We shouldn't forget the positive things that also happened over the course of the season, but the league was a slog. And so there is now this freshness and newness and difference. It has been articulated by David Hopkinson. They couldn't go on as they were financially and shouldn't go on as they were in the transfer window, which was this cycle of boom and bust, you know, bringing in players, splurging, lacking a strategy last summer, too many windows without strengthening the first team. Whether they've strengthened the first team or not this time will have to be seen, but the first team is going to look very different. It's going to look different. And so there is and should be that sense of excitement. Why not? It's like it's different. It's something to get behind. Again, Hopkinson talked about that. You know, if you want a team that fights for absolutely everything, we're the ones for you. If we're, you know, we're not going to be the team that is automatically challenging for the title this season, you know, support somebody else. But if you want a team that is young and hungry, that wants to be here. Yeah. And so that is really important. Players wanting to be here, ambitious, hungry, wanting to kind of get better, buying into what this Newcastle stands for. I am excited about that theory.
And it is a theory at the moment.
That's why I said it in that quite sinister voice. Yeah, yes. Sorry about that.
Is there a particular player or players, Chris Wolf, that you are excited to see, that you have reasons to be optimistic about this season?
Yes, I'm going to pick out three, because I'm going to be greedy. One of whom, two of them are summer signings, one of whom in Basmana Touré. I am really excited to see mainly just how he plays. I think he's just... There is that joy in the way that he plays, the throwback element to he's direct, he's a left-footed left winger, he's pacey, he'll take on his man and try to get the ball into the box. And there are very raw elements to what he produces, but I think that Newcastle fans will enjoy seeing him in full flow if Newcastle can get the most out of him. He might not even start every week. He's going to be competing with Harvey Barnes on the left wing. But of the summer signings, I think he's the most fun so far. I really like that part of him. The one who I have the highest hopes for in the long term, but maybe in the short term we won't see the best of him yet, because I think physically he's got a lot of adaptation and he is only a teenager, is Sean Stur. They feel that he has a huge ceiling. Eddie Howe did as well. Eddie Howe was influential in this signing. There's been some discourse elsewhere to suggest that Howe wasn't involved really early on, even before he decided to resign, because Newcastle had gone down this policy of trying to sign younger players. Yes, that was an edict from above, but Howe was then involved in certainly the signing of the first three players of the summer, including Sean Stur, and he really liked him. He went to meet him and tried to convince him to come, and one of the reasons Stur did come was what Howe had sold to him. So he's just so good on the ball. He gets the ball forward quickly, and I think he could be a real star in the making. I don't want to put too much pressure on too soon, because I'm saying I think in the short term it'll take a lot of time for him to really progress into the player that Newcastle feel he can be, but the all the component parts are there.
And I don't want to break into your little section, except just to add in onto that, what I really love about Stur from what I've seen so far is just that sort of confidence. It's not arrogance, but the confidence to take a risk, you know, to play the ball forward, to try and find a pass. Doesn't always work. I mean, he gave the ball away a few times at the weekend, but to have that confidence to do that, to try and break the lines, is really encouraging. He always wants the ball. He always shows for the ball. And even at the age of 18, he is not beyond ordering people about, telling them where to be, pointing and doing all that kind of stuff. And I love to see that. And yeah, I absolutely share Chris's feelings about that. Whether he can, you know, whether he can break in and make a regular first team place straight away, his own, you know, we'll have to wait and see. That wasn't the plan. But yeah, just really encouraging. Back to you, Chris.
Yeah, and obviously, if Gonzalez does arrive or another midfielder, then that would probably push him a bit further down the pecking order, which in the long term may not be the worst thing, because, as I say, the long term plan, it wasn't probably to play behind someone like Bruno and then progress into that position. But the third player would be Mason Miley, and again, very much not to put pressure on him, because he's barely even played for the 21s, only broke into the 21s at the back end of last season. Played for the under 18s. He's only 17. He signed his first senior contract, but he really grasped that chance in pre-season. I think what Matthias Jais has seen of him so far, he likes that no-nonsense, but also gives everything
never stops a beat, always is chasing around the pitch, always harrying, always listens to instructions. And I think technically there's a lot of work for him still to do. He is actually largely a defensive midfielder who has been moved into right back, played right back the back end of last season for the 19s and the 21s, but primarily a midfielder by trade. And I don't think with Dedic arriving, he's necessarily going to be called upon too much, but he may get time in and around the first team training. And then by the back end of the season, possibly we may even have two Mileys in and around the first team squad.
I just can't help thinking about the Miley home sort of genetic factory, which is just pumping out midfielders that are able to play right back for the next however many years. I'm just obsessed with that.
What were you mainly doing when you were 17, Taylor? And you know, obviously, this.
I don't want to say that in a public place. Definitely not
in a public forum.
Yeah, absolutely
that is the thing. That is the thing that kind of gets me watching Mason at the weekend. It's like, oh my god! It's like I feel sorry for him in a bit because like for the next year we're going to be referring to him as like 17 or 18 year old Mason Mike. You know, not able to mention who he is without mentioning his age. Same as Lewis. It's like,
oh, his brother. Yeah, oh, his brother. You're gonna have to mention as well.
Or yeah, absolutely. But like, that is so astonishing to be able to come onto the pitch at that age and be as mature, be as composed as that, and just look like you're sort of born to it. And, you know, we haven't mentioned him in this section yet, but of course, Lewis Miley, it's a big, big season for him.
Yeah.
You know, you would expect him, all things being equal, to start the season if he's fit, but for him to be a kind of first team regular this season. And he deserves that, you know, he deserves that chance. But yeah, what an astonishing thing to have them. I mean, how many more Mileys are there as well, Chris?
Well, so three of them have already come through at Newcastle. So Jamie is currently at Hartlepool. He did come through the Newcastle system. There is a fourth, Leighton, but he's not actually at Newcastle. He's been at Sunderland, he's been at Middlesbrough. So the fourth Miley brother is not actually part of the Newcastle United setup, but clearly he could make it as a professional footballer, seemingly. So there is a lot of talent there. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to plug an upcoming episode of Extra Time, our subscriber service, which will be focusing on the academy and sort of where they sit in Newcastle United 2.0, what to expect from this season, speaking to people inside of the club and how they see the academy fitting within this sort of reset that there's been this summer. And it'll be based around Newcastle under-21's first Premier League 2 match, which is early next week. So yeah, I just wanted to give a little plug for that.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, we'll check that out. There is one more player that I want to mention just quickly who I didn't put into the running order, but as we've been talking, I've kind of formed this thought in my head. And he played a lot of football last season. He was already in the squad. Started off a little bit shaky and a bit unsure of himself, but I think he came into his own towards the end of the season, and that is Will Osula. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Will Osula does this year. I feel like he might be the starting number nine. He might be the starting centre forward for Newcastle this year. And I'm excited to see what he brings. Obviously, he had some incredible moments last season. That goal against Manchester United, which, you know, that's gonna be replayed millions of times over the years, isn't it? An unbelievable piece of skill and a great finish. I want to see a bit more of that from him this season. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do, George. And I'm sort of, I don't know, there's like a little crackle around him, I think. A little bit of excitement, a bit of nervous energy in the air to see what he can do, what he can bring.
Yeah, what can he do? Can he carry on as he left off? Can he become a regular goal scorer? Will he run in the right direction? You know, he is still that player. I mean, I did a piece for The Athletic towards the end of the last season about that, you know, like what is Will Osula?
Yeah.
And you got some very, very kind of funny responses because he is just that sort of box of kind of craziness.
Yes.
But like we did actually see consistent signs of him being or looking like he could be a proper number nine. And, you know, we definitely, you know, it's been a real slow burn for him. And again, yeah, it's a massive season for him. It's also a massive season for Newcastle. We'll come on to this, but like Newcastle need that player.
Yeah.
You know, Johan Wisse, yeah, he's looked much better in pre-season. Nick Waltimada, like we don't know what we're going to get for him. Newcastle need a quality centre forward. Does Osula have the talent? Probably. Does he have the consistency? Don't know. Does he have the composure, the mentality? Jury's still out, but there's definitely a player there. Big, big season for him.
whatever happens, don't let him take penalties. That's all I'm saying.
Well, who will take penalities? That's a big question as well. Who takes penalties?
Well, obviously, Nick Faldemona missed one at the World Cup as well, didn't he? I mean, God almighty, everyone's missing.
Johan Wissa scored at the World Cup, but he didn't take them for Brentford. So perhaps it'll be Wissa if he's on the pitch. But I mean, it also depends on who's in that makeup. But that is another big question. They've lost Anthony Gordon, as you say. Faldemona's missed a couple. He missed one for Newcastle back in last season as well. And then also Bruno, who took penalties sometimes, albeit I would never have had him as my first-choice penalty taker. He's obviously gone as well. So
at least that run-up has now gone. Yeah, that's another reason to be cheerful. That run-up has gone.
Harvey Barnes. Stick Harvey Barnes on pens. I like that idea. He can find the net.
Is he going to be on the pitch?
Well, potentially this is the problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We just do not know at the moment.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Amar Dedic, Chris, he fills that fullback role that has been missing for so long. And there are more recruits expected. This is another reason to be optimistic.
Yes, and I think that if the Gonzalez deal does happen, and I'm not trying to get anyone here too excited, but also not trying to be too negative about it. He isn't yet a Newcastle player. Negotiations are still ongoing as we are speaking, but it looks like it's heading in that direction. I think he would be a bit of a mood-shifting signing, not transformative mood-shifting signing, but it would change things to a certain degree because he's a Manchester City player. And yes, he's basically unwanted by Man City, but he was seen by Pep Guardiola as being almost like a Rodri Light, for want of a better term, as someone who could control the midfield, could be very good in possession, which Newcastle have not really had that. Even he's a different profile of player to Bruno Guimaraes, which is partly to do with the system that Yaya is going to play, but someone who will use the ball very well. I think there's hope that Newcastle can extract more out of him in terms of his passing up the field, his progressive passing, that maybe at Man City that wasn't what he was required to do, whereas Yaya will want more of that he is capable, but that hasn't necessarily been what he's been asked to do. But the profile of player that he is, and yes, he's not Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, he's not in his late 20s, early 30s, he's not João Paulinho, he's not of that experience ilk, but he is a proven performer at the top level. And for Newcastle to bring him in, I think that would be important, given maybe the rejections they've had this summer or players they've missed out on and the players that they've lost. For Dedic, it's slightly different. It's positive in that he's worked with the Eisler before in Austria at 2 different clubs. He's hopefully not going to need that time to understand what's required of them in that regard. He's not played in the Premier League before, so whether it takes him a bit of an adaptation time, he could play left and right, which is positive if Newcastle aren't going to sign another fullback, which at this stage is looking unlikely. You have Tino Livramento, who can also play both sides. You've got Lewis Holder, who's going to be at left back. So for him, that's a real positive. He seems to have come with a good reputation from Benfica, but he's more of the untested in Premier League sense. And I've seen less of him than I have of Nico Gonzalez. But I think that Newcastle are now hopefully filling the gaps in the squad that have
desperately required filling. And if we'd got to the end of the window and they hadn't signed a fullback and don't sign a midfielder of a certain pedigree, then I would really have been concerned. So I think they have to be seen as big positives.
Yes, and I would have been concerned, and I think also our listeners and viewers would have been concerned if I hadn't called you up, Chris, there. I mean, you corrected yourself very, very quickly, but you did call him potentially a mood-shitting signing. And what I don't want to do is for us to be starting the season in any way attempting to be big, clever, not petty. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of offer that reassurance that even in Pod on the Tyne 2.0, I will absolutely 100% be calling out everybody, including myself, on these things. So, yeah, I don't know what a mood-shitting signing would be, but...
I thought if I just kept talking, then maybe you wouldn't just...
No, I noticed it. You did keep talking for a long, long time, but you brought it round beautifully. And yeah, I made the interjection. And yeah, that's very much how we will continue.
He was just waiting there for you, wasn't he? Waiting for you at the end of that. Yeah, he was never going to let that go.
Yeah.
Gorgeous stuff. George, I want to talk to you about Dan Byrne. Obviously, he's been made club captain. It's a big moment for him, his family, for the North East in general, for the club. I don't think there was really anybody else I would have wanted to see get this job. I am a huge fan of his. He's, you know, he found a way into the nation's heart, didn't he, during the World Cup in the summer? And I think everybody understands what Dan Byrne is, what he does, the kind of player he is, and what he brings to your team, experience and passion and fight and all of that stuff. I think he's going to make a great club captain, and I think that's a massive reason to be cheerful.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week and sort of went through some of the candidates, and, you know, I suppose the only question was whether Dan would be playing every week, whether he would be that sort of captain. But I think if you're talking about club captain, yeah, absolutely, absolutely the right choice. He is one of those players who sets a tone. Now, like, Newcastle have lost some of those players. You know, Bruno was obviously a big one on the pitch particularly, but Kieran Trippier, when he was around the place, even when he wasn't in the team, he was doing that in the dressing room. He was doing that on the training pitch. We've just seen a summer where Dan has done that with England. Like, everybody, you know, people close to him, people around him, people around the England team have all made the same point. He wasn't there just to make up the numbers. He wanted to play. He wanted to start matches. That was, you know, he was driving to do that every single day. But he wasn't there as a tourist. He wasn't there just for a jolly. He was making sure everyone's standards in training every single day were up there, and he was pushing to play. Now, that kind of player is totally valuable. Now, I'm not saying that to minimise what he brings to the team, because I think if he's fit, and he only played 45 minutes against Strasbourg, but I would probably be starting him ahead of Botman, you know, bearing in mind how Botman has been this pre-season. You know, Dan still has a lot to give as a footballer, and he will back himself to get into the team and stay in the team. But if you're talking about character, if you're talking about personality, if you're talking about someone who knows the team, the club, the city inside out, he is the absolute right man for the job. His story, we've gone through that so many times. It's an unbelievable story. And yeah, he absolutely is the right. He is that kind of player equivalent of a hug. He's the kind, you know, like, if he's on the pitch, if he's around the place, part of you sort of thinks, okay, everything will be okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to talk to both of you a little bit about Matthijs Jijsler as well. Chris, we'll start with you. You've obviously been in press conferences with him and stuff like that. You've spoke to him a few times. He's not been in the job a great deal of time. How do we think he's settling in, and what do we think he's going to bring to this club and this season going forward?
There's a word which somebody was speaking to in the club used about him, and that's that he's got a sort of gravitas and aura about him, and I think that you do sense that around the place. But he's both intense, yet at the same time, he exudes a sort of relaxed mood. But the thing about Eddie Howe, particularly when it was anything to do with football, was he just always felt intense. Everything about him was intense, and that was one of his strengths. Jijsler has a similar sort of intensity, but also he carries it a bit lighter at certain points, I think. And he is also just very sure of himself, and he's not going to suffer fools. Glad as we've sort of said. I mean, I tend to feel rather inadequate when I stand next to anybody within professional sports, but particularly the first time I stood next to Matthijs Jijsler, and his biceps are bigger than
my forehead. God, you wouldn't stop going on about it. You're like, everything he wrote, it's like muscles. He's so hench. It's like that. You kept saying that. You're so hench.
Honestly, I just can't get it. I still can't get over it. It's just. In a man who keeps in that good
shape. Does he have seal biceps? Does he have seal biceps? Like in the same way you've got seal thighs?
No, but seal bicep. I don't think it would be a positive description of his.
No,
his
it wouldn't.
Biceps,
no, you're right. So. Is there an animal that has big? Forget it.
No, it's not worth.
But
going
anyway,
down that road.
So I have been impressed with that, and there is clearly a. His it will be his way. He will do things his way, and it's been quite clear how he's going to. But the timing of his press conferences this season looks like they're going to be very different. Eddie Howe was always early in the morning on a Friday. It looks like Yeisler is going to be sort of nominally if a game's on a Saturday, it's going to be on a Thursday afternoon late on, and that's to suit his schedule. He's not going to accommodate media. He's not going to accommodate anyone else. It's going to be he needs to do what he wants to do. That he feels is best for him and the team. And I like that uncompromising nature to a certain degree. But I also think we'll wait and see. He's untested. So we keep using that word, unknown, and those words, unknown and untested. He's obviously had great success at the clubs he's been at so far, but the scrutiny in the Premier League, the level of quality in the Premier League is very different. And I am fascinated to see how he makes that step up and how quickly he can make that step up.
I'm fascinated too. And yeah, this is a reason to be optimistic. We know, again, Hopkinson said they sifted through, or they had something like 178 names on their original list, and he was their top choice. And, yeah. You know, those kind of wonderful and colourful descriptions of him as being rock star and like fire and, you know, this sort of amazing stuff. Now, we haven't really seen that. I mean, as Chris says, he's only been in the job for 2 and a bit weeks. The friendlies are, you know, it's incredibly difficult to judge. Chris talked a little bit last week about some of the sort of little tactical nuances, but like I can't wait for Liverpool. I mean, it's going to be a special occasion anyway, but I want to see that in anger. I want to see what his Newcastle United looks like and feels like. Don't think we've got there yet. Totally a step in the unknown, but like this is the guy that they've really, really pushed to sign. They paid a lot of money for him. They think he's the right person to lead the club. He's talked about DNA and how his DNA should fit Newcastle's DNA. And so I want to see that in anger. I can't wait to see that. And I hope we do.
Like you say, he's an unknown quantity, Matthijs Yeisler, as is the squad, as is the entire team. And that can be a reason for optimism. But the mood has improved a little bit around the club since Eddie Howe departed. But it still feels fragile, Chris, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I very much accept that this is going to be a hindsight opinion. But when you look back when George and I were at the Gateshead game, the first public pre-season friendly, and sort of the mood with Howe afterwards, the club had said he was only going to do like 5 minutes by the side of the pitch. Clearly, actually, that was to try and protect him a little bit because he wasn't going to be involved in the conversations moving forward, and certain people inside the club knew that. But also just his general demeanour, and he didn't seem quite right. Did he have the same energy? It did feel like maybe Newcastle needed something different in that regard. And so there's definitely been a step up from that. We got that in La Manga. We've had that subsequently in everything that's happened at Newcastle. Barring the last three friendly results, which on the pitch it hasn't translated yet. And how could it? Yeisler said he thought he could make his changes he needed within 3 weeks, but at the same time it was never suddenly going to be that Newcastle were going to be transformed to play in the Yeisler ball in that period of time. But yes, I think that the mood has improved. It feels like everyone at Newcastle is on notice, knows they have to impress both the new manager and also to earn their place on the side, because the hierarchy or hierarchical positions of who was going to play where previously obviously changes under a new head coach.
And inevitably, chaps, we've got to have a look at the flip side of this. What are our reasons to be fearful? George, Newcastle 1.0, they were pretty damn good, weren't they? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think we should try and rattle through these a little bit. So let's have as our touchstone the hopeometer, 65% positive, 35% negative. So that's on us now to try and be 46% quicker. That wasn't a good start. Yeah, of course. And so we're only going to think, let's only think about the negative now. Okay, so we won't caveat it. We try not to caveat the positive. So let's try not to caveat the negative. 1.0, Newcastle 1.0 brought us everything we'd ever dreamt of as Newcastle fans. Certainly for me, a trophy. And, you know,
crying at Wembley.
Crying at Wembley for a nice reason as opposed to the usual reason. Like, just astonishing. Like, it was just astonishing. Newcastle have lost their touchdowns. Newcastle have lost their four best players over the past 12 months. They've lost the manager. They've lost a guy that, whether things were good or bad, he was always the same. He was always measured, a man of huge dignity, talent, humility. And, like, we can't ignore that fact. Like, this is a new era, fair enough, but the era that we've just left behind was very, very special, and we forget that at our peril.
They are an unproven team, aren't they, Chris? They are very, very young. They lack experience, and a lot of those big characters and big players have gone from the squad.
Yes, and the excitement around youth, my concern is that is there the enough experience and enough sort of know-how within the squad to really help those players, certainly in the short term, but even in the longer term, develop into the players that, that Newcastle hope they will become. I think there's a balance that needs to be struck. Newcastle have had the majority of their players in that sort of prime age of their career have left over the course of the last 12 months. They now have a lot of ageing players who maybe are beyond their prime, and then they have a lot of players towards the start of their career. I just think there's not necessarily the happy medium there was before. Average age of the squad is actually sort of middle of the road Premier League now, but that's because Newcastle are at the two extremes. They don't really have the many in the happy medium pot. So yeah, I do worry if too many of those young players have to be played too soon, the negative impact that could potentially have on them. But for some, it will be sink or swim time. And also Newcastle, if they, having brought in Dedic, and if they do bring in someone like Nico Gonzalez as well, maybe they won't be as exposed with some of those young, as many of those young players in the short term as I'd previously feared they would be.
And I think the big question, George, really is, are they ready, isn't it? You and Chris explored this at the weekend on the match day episode. And I think it's, by judging just on the pre-season, I don't think they're anywhere near ready at the moment. Now, how quick they can pull that together and how quick they can start putting performances together in the Premier League, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It certainly is. And are they good enough? And are they good enough for right now? And as I said, if you've lost your four best players, then it's very difficult to kind of replace them. It's very difficult to upgrade on them. I think I would say that Newcastle haven't done that. How could you? Like when, you know, Bruno Guimarães has gone to Arsenal. I'm not going to list the rest of them because I've immediately forgotten them. But like, you know, no, Gordon's gone to Barcelona. Isak last summer went to Liverpool, etc., etc. Tonali to Spurs. That doesn't quite work. But do you know what I mean? And like, there's a reason that they've moved to those teams, and the players that have come in, there's a reason why Newcastle have been able to sign them. So Newcastle aren't going to be stronger this season in terms of individual talent. So now you can make the counter argument and say that even with all that talent, Newcastle only finished 12th in the Premier League last season. But does that actually not mean we should be even more worried? Like if they finish 12th with that team, what is going to happen now? And that is the big thing. You know, can they gel? There's been a lot of change. Can they gel? Can they gel quickly? And are they ready?
Chris, goals or a lack thereof, they're going to be a big problem, aren't they? We've all sort of felt this in pre-season. We're wondering where the goals are going to come from and how those forward players are going to slot into this system that Yaisla wants to employ.
Yes, you mentioned D'Souza earlier, and I get that there can be a lot of excitement about him, but I almost think he sums up Newcastle United 2.0 in that I don't know yet how good he can become. I think he has a very high ceiling, but can he fulfill that on a regular basis?
Would he have hit his very high ceiling with that penalty?
I mean, that would be a very high ceiling indeed if he did. So
stop sighing at my jokes. It's the start of the season. You've got to be.
Well, that's no change to preview. I'm not going to. If you want us to not change whatever we've done up to this stage of the podcast, then I'm
my reason to be fearful is that he's going to carry on this way for the rest of.
Oh, what a mood shitter you both are.
On the goals front, it's not even just the lack of out and out goal scorers or proven goal scorers in the team. You can argue that Wissa may end up being a positive if he can find some form. Voldemort obviously had a purple patch when he first arrived at Newcastle, but Harvey Barnes scored 16 goals last season and has a very good goal scoring return. But where is the creativity? Who is? I still don't think Newcastle have brought in someone who provides that real spark on the pitch. They've lost Bruno Guimarães. Who is going to dig them out of a hole? Who's going to break down a low block defence? Who's going to just provide those moments of inspiration? So beyond even just the goals, I think that theoretically maybe they have some players who are capable of scoring a lot of goals, but are they going to get the service to be able to score all of those goals? Where is the creativity come from going there? That is my main concern right now.
And the defence as well, George. So many new connections, new partnerships there. We've got new signings coming in. Some players looking slightly shaky. That is a concern back there.
Yeah, I mean, clean sheets were not a regular occurrence last season. I think if you look at Newcastle's first choice back four, let's stick with the outfield players first. I think, you know, you don't have huge doubts about the quality there in Livramento, in Chow, Bernal, Botman, and
Lewis Hall.
Thank you. You're a very good player. You know, you don't have doubts about their kind of quality, but you do have some doubts about their availability. You do have doubts. I know Dedic has arrived. You do have doubts about backup. Certainly have some doubts about whether there's enough pace. And there can only be doubts about the goalkeeper as well. I only say that because he hasn't played in the Premier League before. He's very young. I think there's been a couple of little ropey moments in pre-season. So, you know, that's a new relationship, as you mentioned, there, Taylor. And it is all about those units. They have to be as a unit. Yeah. And so there are some questions. Those players do need to step up, but it's, not too long ago, not too many years ago, Newcastle's defence was the bedrock for what they were as a team, and it's not that anymore.
The squad makeup, Chris, it's interesting this, isn't it? There seems to be a few sort of oval-shaped players that they're trying to fit into round holes at the moment. Some people don't quite slot into that Matthias Yeislab way of playing or that system he wants to play.
No, and that's natural when a head coach has been there for 4 to 5 years and the squad's been built in him, his image, and largely he's played with a 4-3-3 for the most part. Now, the players, stylistically, I think a lot of them can do and play the football that Yeisler wants to bring in, but in the actual specific system, are some of the players going to, Joe Linton's injured, he's going to be out for the next couple of weeks, where does Joe Linton fit into this system? I don't see him as a deep line number six. I don't see him as a number 10. He could theoretically play as a on the left of a 4-2-3-1, but usually Yeisler seems to have like pace in there to get him behind. Nick Voldemort again, where's he going to fit in? Stylistically, maybe there is a question mark there. And they bringing in Nico Gonzalez and Bamba and the like, they are starting to bring in number sixes, but largely they haven't signed number sixes historically. They still don't have a number 10. So I think the squad makeup still has some work to do. And if Newcastle had known going into the summer that Yeisler was going to be there or that Howe wasn't going to be there, maybe they would have tried to form it in a slightly different way to what they actually have done.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero pain au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Right then, chaps, let's do a couple of predictions ahead of the new season. I know you hate this, but we got to do it. This is what people want. League position, George, where do you think Newcastle United are going to finish? Come on, it's neck on the line time. It's nuts on the table. Arse on the road. I don't know, whatever it is. Come on.
Mick McCarthy. It's my backside in the bacon slicer. I just don't know. I just don't know. I don't know about anything. I mean, I think we've kind of gone through all these reasons. I'm going to have to say 10th. I'm going to have to just go right in the middle.
Split the difference, yeah.
And split the difference. I do think it's going to be a tough season. I hope that there's positivity around it. I hope there's stuff for us all to get behind. I could see it going, honestly, I could see it going either way. But I'm going to be positive, and I think saying 10th is a positive. It would be an improvement on last season. Again, I would caveat with that. I think we need to see signs of improvement elsewhere. But I'm going to say 10th. I just don't know what else to do.
Okay. Chris Wolf?
Well, since I'm not allowed to copy George, because that would have been the answer I would have given, and I feel that I have to be different, I'm going to go for 9th. Again, I think that's quite optimistic. And it would be an improvement on last season. The issue, I think, would be that financially Newcastle need to get back into Europe.
Yeah.
So therefore, if they're going to finish 9th, and it's not impossible that 9th could bring about European qualification depending on what happens in the Cups, but to actually control their own destiny in that regard, that would suggest Newcastle need to win one of the two domestic Cups.
In the deviation from the usual sort of chirpiness that I bring to this show, I'm going to go the opposite way of you guys. I'm quite pessimistic about this. I think it's going to be somewhere around 15th or 16th this season. I think there's too many moving parts. I think there's too much change, too many things have shifted, and I think it's going to take a bit of time. I say that hoping that I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. But there's something in my guts and in my instinct here which tells me that this is going to take a bit of time to work things out, you know, in the words of the beautiful South. I think this is going to take a bit of time, definitely.
My suspicion is that you're right, Taylor, but I am very much attempting to be Newcastle 2.0 about this. So hence what I've said.
Fair play. It would be nice to have a little run in the Cups, wouldn't it? That would be something that would be a little bit of a distraction from the league. George, do you think Newcastle have got a chance?
Well, and this is another kind of really interesting thing because, you know, by and large, Newcastle's record under Eddie Howe in the 1.0 era was tremendous. I mean, not always in the FA Cup, but like, you know, really, really, you know, getting to semi-finals, getting to finals, we've seen that. So I think there will sort of be that bit of expectation that could and should continue, and I would love it to. You know, that's always been the thing that I kind of look to. Positive signs, not confidence, not arrogance, but about the draw that they've got against West Brom. It's at home. It's a Championship team. It's a good opportunity. What I also hope happens in the Cups is that the draw is kinder, that Newcastle can rotate a little bit. Didn't see any of that last summer. You know, for obvious reasons, the caliber in the Champions League and, you know, and in the League Cup and in the FA Cup was unbelievable. I hope that there was that opportunity to give minutes to other players. And I mean, I'm not going to give a prediction because I think it's so difficult, but I want to see Newcastle progress in Cups.
Would you cheat on Knox with Carabao again?
I don't want to speak out of school here, but Carabao is fucking disgusting, if we're being honest. It really is.
I just want to say, before I say this, we are open to sponsorship opportunities. And it is about now that I do love to drink from a refreshing can of Knox.
Yeah.
Hydration. Oh, no, I don't know what this spiel is.
Other disgusting energy drinks are available as well.
It's not
an
caffeine.
Energy drink, it's a hydration
It's not,
drink.
Yes.
No,
it's not, hasn't
Carabao,
got,
but go on.
Yeah, it hasn't got caffeine in it. And, well, the tropical flavour is not wholly unpleasant, put it that way.
Right, wow.
There's a Lilt-esque taste to it, if that means tropical. Anything to our...
If Lilt want to sponsor us instead, then...
Yes, Lilt.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, then one thing we have to mention, which we haven't mentioned, is the derby. Is that going to be another harrowing escapade for Newcastle United this season? Or do we think, George, that we might be able to turn it around?
I predicted for the second game last season that Newcastle would turn up. I got that 100% wrong. I think Newcastle will turn up against Sunderland this season. That is my prediction.
Good. There can be no excuses for that this season as well.
No, absolutely.
There are, even if they're getting far in the domestic cups, there can be no excuse. Sunderland will be in Europe, Newcastle will not be.
Yeah.
Just before we move on, I want to tell you about our latest Extra Time podcast offering. The transfer soap opera is as crazy as it's ever been, certainly where Newcastle are concerned, and the rumour mill is bad enough without having to negotiate the complex details of club finances. We secured the services of barrister and former football agent Spencer Downey to help us demystify the ins and outs of the modern marketplace. Here's a quick clip of Spencer addressing a provocatively worded question.
As far as the agitators and shit-doers, there's lots of those. Now, they're a segment that are normally not the qualified agent. So there'll be somebody on there who won't do the deal, but they'll be unregulated. And they're the ones that are out there agitating, causing problems. You see it a lot at lower levels. You see it an awful lot in academies when they're trying to sign young players, and it happens all the time, and trying to capture them. And there's also a certain rogue element who are unregistered agents who will negotiate or broker deals, and then they'll use a regulated agent to do the final part of the paperwork. You can't stop that. You'll try your very best. The best way to stop it is for clubs to say, we're not dealing with you. And Man City do that very well. And Newcastle are getting better at it. You have your preferred agents who you work with. But ultimately, if an agent's got control of a player, whether you like the agent or not, you're going to deal with them. And back to the super agent's point, in reality, there's probably three in the world. I worked with Pina Sir Harvey, who I would say personally is one of the most honest and strongest. Had some huge players over the years. Unfortunately, Pini's aging quite a lot now. You'd be probably happy to hear that Pini started off as a journalist of all things originally. It goes from there.
Didn't know that.
George Mendes, again with Chester Flute, huge agent. And then Keir, who you see towards the end, who has his own technique and own approach.
That was a very interesting chat, that, with Spencer. That's going to be available as an audio podcast to Extra Time subscribers very, very soon, to look out for that. Podonthetine.supportandcast.fm if you'd like to find out more about Extra Time and our other subscription offerings. Right, George was at St James's Park for a proper sighting of the Lasses as they played their first public pre-season friendly at the weekend. They lost 2-0 to Champions League-bound Inter Milan side. Tanya Oxtoby's team don't play their first WSL too much until September 6th when they're at home to Wolves at Gateshead. George, you caught up with the head coach post-match and began by asking her for takeaways from that intergame.
Yeah, I think good minutes for players today. We wanted to make sure we brought everybody that was fit and available to experience, obviously, St James's with the amount of games that we've got, obviously, here this season. I think we've got a really busy week coming up because we're going away to Spain, 3-game week. So trying to manage players' minutes and make sure that we expose players in the right way at the right time. I thought second half we created some really good opportunities, which is pleasing. But again, we need to finish those off against a really, really good side. You can see the way they control the ball, and they're in Champions League for a reason. That's it's a good test for us, I think, for us for pre-season. We've wanted to play teams that are going to really stretch us and punish us when we make mistakes, to try and really fine-tune that. I think along with that, it's about trying to get the squad to gel, because we've obviously had a number of new additions as well. So pleased with overall with the performance. Still things to work on, but we've got a few weeks to do that.
A number is downplaying it slightly because it's 11. I think 11 new signings this summer. And I think we saw 6 in the starting lineup today. You must be happy with the business, I presume. And can you give us a theme of what the overall strategy has been this summer?
Yeah, really happy with our business, to be honest. I think the work started probably just after the winter window closed, around identifying what we needed. And we went early, we went hard. I think the players we brought in understand the club and know what we're going after as a group, and I think they add a lot on and off the pitch, which is important. But fundamentally, we wanted a group that were going to compete in all positions. I think we lacked that a little bit last season, where if a player's not in form or we have an injury, we were playing people out of position to try and cover that. And we wanted to make sure that we had competition for places, but also cover in all areas and good balance. And I think we've got that now. Football's a long season, so we might not have it for the whole time, but I feel like we're in a really good place, and we've brought good characters in that know how to win as well, which is important.
There's not an awful lot that you can learn from this sort of 90 minutes of isolation, George, is there? But is there anything that caught your eye from the Lasses?
It was a really good test. I mean, Inter Milan were excellent, I thought. Yeah. And, one of the interesting things that Newcastle are doing this summer is picking high-calibre opposition that they will be able to learn from and that will provide them with a challenge. I thought that sort of very interesting. They held their own. They looked pretty good. Yeah, I think it was six new signings started that match. So that was kind of good to see them. And there was just sort of a lot of confidence around. And also, I think that sense, I mean, you know, at the end of that clip, I asked Tanya, I didn't say promotion or bust, but it's basically promotion or else kind of thing. So that sounds a bit threatening, but it sort of is. I mean, she's like said, you know, there's no hiding place, you know, and she's confident about that. She's comfortable with that. They've gone big again. You know, they've really gone big this time. They brought in a lot of experience. It was interesting to see, you know, number nine, a quality number nine on the pitch, experienced number nine. And, you know, people who were kind of well versed at this level and above. And so it's kind of no messing about, really. That was my takeaway. Very much looking to the start, looking forward to the start of their season too.
Excellent stuff. The Lasses played another friendly as well on Tuesday morning where they beat Man United women's team 1-0. A great result, that. Excellent stuff. Right then, chaps, let's move on. Newcastle are up against Liverpool this weekend, the first game of the new Premier League season. George, there's going to be a lot of tributes to Kevin Keegan at this one. It's going to be an emotional pre-match.
It sure is. Yeah, it will be amazing. It'll be very emotional. War flags have it all in hand. You know, they've got a lot of things planned. We'll be seeing images from Keegan's playing days, his managerial days. We'll see some of his famous words across the stadium, and the club, you know, the club are determined to do the right thing too. And yeah, an astonishing figure, an astonishing human being. His contribution to Liverpool as a player was obviously immense. His contribution to Newcastle cannot be overstated. He was the man that changed everything. He did it twice, at least. He came here as a player, you know, incredible moment for the club, got the team promoted in that kind of fine team as was then that came up with Waddle and Beardsley and others. And then came back to us in 1992, having not watched any games of football. I think he'd watched two games of football live in the intervening period. Saved the club from relegation, dragged it up into the Premier League, playing astonishing football. The St James's Park grew around him. You know, like, we can't thank him enough. Like, if Eddie Howe was the man who made our dreams come true, it was Keegan who gave us those dreams in the first place. It will be an amazing occasion, and I just can't wait to see it and feel it and be part of it.
And then, Chris, there's a game of football to be played as well, and we can add a dash of pantomime villain into proceedings, can't we? Alexander Isak will be back on the St James's Park pitch for the first time. Should be spicy, I believe is the word.
Yes, very, very much so. I mean, it feels slightly incongruous in that sense that whereas last time Newcastle played Liverpool on Tyneside was a similar point of the season. It was actually the week before the transfer deadline, and Isak was still a Newcastle player. But as we found out afterwards, a delegation had gone to his house earlier that day, and he basically reiterated that he wanted to leave. And that was the point where I think the penny dropped at the very top of the club that Isak had to go. But it was like a visceral atmosphere inside St James's Park that night, and it almost drove Newcastle on to certainly get a draw when they had 10 men. But obviously the very late goal when Engamoa scored. I think this year there's going to be that feeling of union and unity between everyone in the ground to show that appreciation for Keegan. Then it's going to suddenly switch. Whether that's to Newcastle's benefit, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it would be if you were just selecting a match environment, you'd want it to just be that full focus on everyone and Newcastle side together. But obviously events have changed that, and rightly there is this. There's going to be a tribute to Kevin Keegan. But I think Isak, if he does play, it'll be really, really intriguing to see how he handles that, because I think there will be a lot of anger directed towards him. I'm sure there'll be chants, and whether there are even banners or whatever. I don't mean war flags, but whether people bring in banners or the like, or certain objects that they may wave and sort of show in their certain way of certain animals that they relate to him for having left Newcastle. Whether he rises to that and then scores, or whether it has the effect that he sort of cowers a little bit, will be interesting. Also,
Will Victor Munoz play? It won't be exactly the same sort of relationship there, but someone who opted to go to Liverpool ahead of Newcastle this summer. And if he does play, then I imagine he wouldn't be in for a brilliant reception either.
Yeah, and in amongst all of that, George, it's the first true run-out for Newcastle 2.0, isn't it? Still the beta version, definitely. There's still a lot of testing going on with the software, getting some bugs out. But yes, the first official run-out for 2.0.
Yeah, which of course is fascinating. We'll wait a bit with bated breath to see what that looks like. And, you know, going back, you know, adding to that, but kind of going back a bit to what Chris has just said, it's not too dissimilar for Liverpool. They've got a new manager in Areola, you know, did brilliantly at Bournemouth. But there's been mutterings around the club, the team. Can they run in the way that he wants them to do? It's their first season without Mo Salah. He's gone. Andy Robertson has gone. Question marks about, you know, Virgil van Dijk. Is he still an elite defender? And their place at the bottom of this sort of mood table I've done, again, not scientific by any stretch of the imagination, but is indicative of the fact that they're facing a new era too. And so there's going to be a lot of uncertainty around the place. And does it, dare we even say this out loud, is it a good time for Newcastle to be playing Liverpool? Can we catch them unawares? So, yeah, we, you know, again, there's all of those certainties are removed. No Salah, no Bruno, no Gordon, no Tonali, all of those things. Isak back. He had a bad first season at Liverpool. We just don't know what to expect, do we?
And that press box is going to be packed with thighs and laptops alike, isn't it, Chris?
It very much is. I mean, there's always a huge following for Liverpool and a media capacity. This is the first game of their season, the first game of the Areola era. It's also the Keegan tributes. And by the sounds of it, there will not only be a full press box, because there's going to be so many rights holders there, and by that I mean sort of TV and radio who want to be in place, and so many written media, that actually some of them will be in the press room watching the match rather than actually in the press box as well, because they're so massively oversubscribed for this game. So that's not ideal in many ways. Certainly if you're a written reporter, I hope that I will be in the press box, but I wait and see on that regard. But otherwise, yeah, watching on a screen in the press room just to make sure you're there for the pre-match and the post-match and to speak to Yeisler and the players and Areola. But not every single one of the media, by the sounds of it, is actually going to be in the press box itself.
You talk about thighs. I mean, the thing is, Chris's body only takes up one seat, but his thighs take up four. So it's not, I mean, you know, he doesn't make it easier for the rest of us. Is that fair? I don't know if that's fair, really.
I'm looking forward to not having to sit next to you at the game.
Oh, come on now, come on. Come on, let's not. It's going to be an unbelievable occasion, whatever happens. Right then, thanks very much. Pod on the Tyne will be on YouTube every week, and there's plenty more for podcast listeners with matchday reaction shows and special features on our Extra Tyne feed as well. You can get Pod on the Tyne from all good podcast outlets, and podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription if you want to listen ad-free or to get that additional content on our Extra Tyne feed. Please do not hesitate to get in touch, podonthetyne@gmail.com. And don't forget our live show as well, October the 9th at Gosforth Civic Theatre. Tickets are already on general sale and they are selling out quick, so get stuck in there if you want to be at that show. Right then, thank you very much, chaps. Time to say goodbye. Cheers for your time, George.
You're welcome. There is no place for mood shitters in Newcastle 2.0. No place at all, nor on this podcast. We are only looking forward. We're only going in one direction. I don't know what that direction is, but we're only going forward in that direction.
It was 65% positive, 35% negative, I believe. It was the ratios that we stuck to.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time, Christopher Woff.
You're very welcome. I'm pleased that the Forney War of pre-season is over and that the actual skirmishes will begin. I want to finish with one final prediction, and that is that George Colkin will cry at some stage this season. I don't know whether it'll be tears of joy, tears of negativity, to just what he's seen on the pitch. But to do with football, I think George will cry across this season.
But that's really not a prediction, is it? I mean, it's that is like saying...
Shooting fish in a barrel, that one, Chris. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to cry on Sunday.
Right. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening and watching out there. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Have a fantastic week, and we shall speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Real value shows up in reliability you don't have to second guess. Like a set of Firestone all-season tires. They're designed to deliver confidence-inspiring wet weather traction and a quieter ride, no matter the road, season after season. Firestone all-season tires. For durability you can count on, just like people count on you. Firestone. Always dependable since 1900.
Every small business starts with a dream and the courage to chase it. But even the strongest dreams need protection. That's why The Hartford has been a trusted partner for more than 1 million small business owners across America. From retail shops to financial professionals, The Hartford understands that every business is unique. Their customized coverage options help protect what matters most: your work, your people, and your future. Because when life throws the unexpected your way, you deserve a partner that helps you stand strong. Help protect your dream. Visit thehartford.com/smallbusiness for a quote today.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the States in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.